The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 11th of September 2025. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. You're very welcome along to another 3 hours of your favourite show, I hope. It's all about getting behind the news headlines, your views, and the best features as well. We really value your contribution to the show. If you want to comment on issues we are bringing to you or topics we're bringing to you, please do. And also, if there's something that you want to discuss yourself or a topic you wish to raise or some information you wish to pass on, well, here are the numbers for you. WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And you can email us as well, of course. It's comments at highlandradio.com. Right, let's look at the papers because it's a busy Thursday, because lots and lots of papers come out on a Thursday. The Tyrconnell Tribune is having a look at the national political picture, for Fianna Fáil at least, and it reads as follows. When the dust had finally settled in Leinster House on Tuesday after the Taoiseach's presidential choice, Jim Gavin, could only muster 58.6% of the vote, the real shock was that Billy Kelleher polled 41.4% of the parliamentary party vote, way ahead of his supporters' wildest expectations. The result is Micheál Martin's biggest challenge since getting the leadership in 2011, and the scene is now set for a heave against him sooner rather than later. And there's an extensive article exploring that proposition more on the front of an inside the Tyrconnell Tribune today. The Donegal News leads with the headline, New School Building is Vital. A Letterkenny principal is calling for the urgent delivery of a new school building currently stalled by planning issues. Danny McFadden of Errigal College has said it's now vital that community and elected representatives help push it forward amid surging enrolment numbers at the school. In recent weeks, the school welcomed 130 first-year students, marking its largest ever intake. With surging enrolments, a growing demand for co-education and a forward-looking STEM programme, their future is bright, but it depends heavily on the delivery of a new school building. The Derry News lead this morning, over £1 million spent on housing vulnerable children in care. The Western Health and Social Care Trust is housing some of the looked-after children in its care in Airbnb, hotel and bed and breakfast accommodation. This is due to the lack of in-house trust accommodation facilities. 10,102 nights have been used in this alternative accommodation between January 2020 and June 2025 at a cost of more than £1 million. On to the Nationals now, and a massive story in the United States and beyond as well. Many of you would be familiar with Charlie Kirk. He's a very, very popular conservative activist. He was very much responsible for engaging more young people in politics in America, the majority of those probably becoming Trump supporters. He had a way of reaching people through podcasts and also traveling around college campuses. You might have seen some of the videos where, you know, he's challenged on certain issues. It could be trans people, it could be Catholicism or immigration or what have you, and he would engage back and forward with the students in that regard. And he was doing one of those last night, yesterday, local time in Utah, and he was assassinated. A sniper shot him from about 200 yards, shot him in his neck, and he died within a couple of hours. And it sent shockwaves through the American political scene. It's only the latest political shooting to happen. And, you know, I don't think we're that far behind it here before this kind of stuff starts happening. He would have been on the right. He had a book, in fact, where I can't remember exactly what. Right wing. He wrote a book himself where he talked of being right wing. Some people are seeing that as a slur, but he himself identified himself as right wing. He was a very strong conservative, a 31-year-old family man with wife and two children. But as I say, this kind of activity where you have people with extreme views or not so extreme views no longer talking. They don't talk anymore. And this is a point I was trying to make a few weeks back when, you know, if you platform someone another group of individuals don't like, you're the worst in the world, you shouldn't do it. And then you get it from the other side or from different spaces and what have you. So what we have is people that not only, as it would have been in the past, of different political views, you know, whereby you could have two politicians who are completely opposed politically on the floor of the Dáil, for an example, or in the council chamber, but they could go out and have something to eat for lunch and thrash out what they have in common and maybe even come into some sort of central ground where we could move forward politically. Those days now seem to be gone, whereby someone who disagrees with you politically nowadays is almost your enemy. They're your enemy. Like I saw people on social media yesterday, people not just in America, Ireland and Britain as well, glorifying this man's death, saying that it was fantastic, calling him the worst swear words that you possibly can because they disagreed with him politically. And I just wonder how far are we away from that in this country whereby we don't talk things through, we don't agree to disagree, we don't negotiate to try and move forward, that we are pitching ourselves against each other, we are doxing people whereby we're showing where people are living, we're making threats against other types of politicians and their families. And where does it all end? I think we've a window of opportunity to take a step back in Ireland. I think it's too late in the United States because I would suggest in his reaction to this that Donald Trump has actually stirred the divisions even further. And that's not to blame one side or other because I don't care for one side or the other. But we have a very small window of opportunity, I think, in Ireland to maybe take a step back from this type of politics. Will we? I don't think so. Much of this is driven on social media. He reached his people on social media. He made his money on social media, and he made his enemies on social media. So me talking about it on this type of show probably makes no difference, but that's where things are at now. I didn't read the story, did I? Sorry, I just went off on one. Charlie Kirk, a conservative activist and close ally of President Donald Trump, died yesterday after being shot at a college event, Trump said. The co-founder and CEO of the youth organization Turning Point USA, the 31-year-old Kirk is the latest victim in a spasm of political violence across the United States. And I will say one thing, by the way, you might be saying Charlie Kirk, who maybe you've never heard of him, but I guarantee you, if you've got children in your home, 15 plus, they know exactly who Charlie Kirk is. And the truth is, and I never thought we'd get to this point, they're very likely to have seen him being shot because there was a time when those videos would have been scrubbed from the internet immediately, but they're all over TikTok and particularly the X platform. So it's very likely young people in your house know who he is, and it's very likely they've actually seen that assassination as well, which I don't think is incredibly healthy. The Irish Times, NATO denounces reckless Russian drone incursion into Polish airspace. Again, this is not a local Donegal story or even an Irish story, but this one certainly could have ramifications. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte has denounced as reckless a Russian-steered drone incursion into Polish airspace, warning the alliance will defend every inch of its territory, but will it? In a serious escalation of Russia's war in Ukraine, NATO-allied aircraft were scrambled to shoot down some of the 19 drones that entered Polish airspace over a six-hour period until 6:30 a.m. yesterday. It's clear Russia, Vladimir Putin, he's playing a game here. He's got Donald Trump exactly where he wants him. Donald Trump barely reacted to that. As a whole, Europe has really not reacted to that. This whole crack of we'll defend every inch, I think President Putin is actually testing that. And he can do whatever he likes. And of course, in Israel feel that they can do whatever they like. Where's this country going to go? Well, it's going to go to 7.6 million people by 2065, so hopefully within many of our lifetimes. Immigration could push Ireland's population to 7.6 million in the next 40 years, a new Department of Finance demographic report has said. Now, this is in the Irish Daily Mail. The lowest estimate is a population of about 6 million in the next 40 years. The report states that immigration is now at unprecedented levels and that this may have to continue as Irish women's fertility rate continues to drop. Globally, the flow and scale of international migration is reaching levels not seen in decades, with overall global migration figures at unprecedented levels, the report notes. So, I mean, just some basic maths. I think, you know, native Irish, in inverted commas, around about 76% of the population at the moment. If our population increases to 7.6 million, mostly through immigration, it is going to be down around the 50-50, or even the Irish being in something of a narrow minority just in the next 30 or 40 years. But the paper is claiming this has to happen because we're not making babies. This report mapped out how Ireland's population and demographic profile may change over the coming four decades. In the highest scenario, the population could potentially reach 7.59 million. In the low scenario, it could reach 6 million by the same date, with the labour force contracting from 2041 onwards. For context, the latest census in 2022 put the population of the country at 5.15 million. So, interesting statistics in that paper of what's coming down the line. And in Britain or larger countries with, you know, tens of millions of a population, those changes probably aren't quite as, I don't know if dramatic is the right word, but aren't quite as impactful as a population that's as small as ours. The Farmers Journal, new TB plan sparks alarm with farmers. Tighter animal movement restrictions and a more stringent testing regime announced in the long-awaited TB action plan have sparked serious unease among farmers this week. The absence of any new or additional compensation funding in the new program has highlighted farmer concerns. Among the measures in the plan launched by Minister for Agriculture Martin Hayden this week is a ban on the sale of cows from TB-restricted herds to other farms for 2 years. Now, there's some people believe that the whole approach to dealing with TB is completely incorrect. That flotilla continues its trip to Gaza. This is in the Irish Daily Mirror. And a flotilla carrying Irish activists was hit by a suspected Israeli drone less than 24 hours after a different vessel in the fleet was also targeted. Tyke Hickey, Fra Hughes and Tara Reina O'Grady are currently on board the ALMA, which is part of the Global Summit Flotilla. The convoy of ships is heading towards Gaza in a bid to create a humanitarian corridor. But twice now, it would appear that it has been targeted. The suspicion is that drones are flying over the ships and dropping something, some accelerant down on top of them. Fianna Fáil TD said she isn't being listened to by her party colleagues on special education as her autistic son was refused from 12 schools. Deputy Catherine Arda shares two children with her husband, Dara McShay, who's Fianna Fáil Assistant General Secretary. They have five-year-old twin boys, Sean and Dara Og, who is autistic and nonverbal. The parents began looking for a special needs class space for Dara Og last October and were consistently disappointed. She's been speaking out about it, saying, look, I understand what's going on here and we simply are not being listened to. All right, that was a run through some of the stories making the papers today. If anything there caught your ear, feel free to send in a comment to 086 60 25000, or if you prefer, give us a call on 074 91 25000. We're joined on the programme by Keith Kelly, Irish Independent reporter. Keith, good morning to you.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you with us. Now, you've been writing about an apology issued by Dublin Airport, and hopefully this affects some people listening to this show today and they might benefit from this. So what happened that led to this apology?
Yeah, so Dublin Airport's operator, the DAA, announced yesterday that a pricing system error had led to 4,500 customers of its car park being overcharged by a total amount of €25,000. Now, that overcharging, which the DAA has fully owned up to, relates to two flash sales in its car parks that took place in March and May of this year, where parking was to be charged at just a €10 flat rate per day. But that €10 rate, the airport says, was actually accidentally applied even to off-peak times, which are supposed to be lower. So essentially, customers ended up paying more when they should have been paying less. So, for instance, one consumer reported that before the March sale, that the price for 10 days parking was €83. However, this rose to 110 for the same dates during the sale. And another customer noted that they booked parking for a 5-day stay during the sale at a cost of €60. And then the price for the same parking was just 56 after the sale ended. So they didn't make any savings. So amounts that were overcharged range between 1 to €64, the airport says. But they also said the average amount overcharged was about €5.
Yeah, okay. And if people are affected by this, do they have to check this out themselves, Keith, or will they be automatically contacted by Dublin Airport or what have you?
Yep, so the DAA has basically said that you don't have to lift a finger. If you've been affected, they apologise unreservedly, but you don't have to lift a finger. They will get in contact with you and bring you your refund. And they've also said that they're not just going to refund the amount that you were overcharged, but they're also going to refund overcharged customers their entire booking fees. So all the money that they put in to booking car park, for their car park, will be refunded to all the customers affected. And this is going to cost the airport a total of €350,000.
Oh, it's an expensive mistake, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't want to be responsible for that one. But,
well, you just get away with it, Keith. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead, yeah. Sorry.
No, yeah, if you have been affected, though, customers can expect to be contacted and refunded individually within maybe the next 5 to 10 days.
All right, good stuff. And this triggered an investigation. Why are the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission getting involved?
Yeah, so the acronym, the CCPC, they said in a statement that it's against the law to provide incorrect or misleading information to consumers about price promotions. So it's their duty to respond to complaints about such mistakes such as this of overcharging customers. And this was the case. They received a number of complaints and they dutifully responded. They contacted Dublin Airport and Dublin Airport said that as soon as they learned of their mistake, that they took immediate action to rectify this. So the airport has also said that they are putting in place, you know, checks to make sure that the same thing doesn't happen again.
All right, good stuff. So you can, if you were in the airport, you will be notified. You don't have to do anything. Thanks, Keith. That's Keith Kelly, Irish Independent reporter. Now, we were talking about the closure of Balear ISPCA, and the voice I thought was absent from this was the ISPCAs themselves. What is going on here? What are their plans? And they did release a statement to us, which I'll read now. I know it's been carried on the news, but perhaps some of you didn't hear. And just to give you a background, we've been listening to people in animal welfare circles who are very concerned about the closure of Balear. They've called it Balear here. Balear, because of the inhumane situation it will leave animals in this county. But the statement reads as follows. The closure of Balear ISPCA Centre is a decision taken by the ISPCA with regard to the immediate viability of our organisation earlier this year. The closure is not related to the proposed merger with the DSPCA, which concerns the future viability of our other services. The ISPCA has faced a number of serious financial challenges over recent years due to the need to meet an overwhelming crisis in animal cruelty cases and the pressure on our facilities. Naturally, they say, our operations needed to be tailored to meet with ongoing income, and we carried out a full review of all costs. The results of this review illustrated, unfortunately, that it's not financially viable to maintain the facility in Donegal. A recognition of our service delivery and facilities has been essential to become more efficient and continue to prioritise the needs of animals across the country. All animals will be rehomed to other facilities. The ISPCA has put in place planned redundancies at the Donegal facility, and they say, we will observe all rules and entitlements to staff at this difficult time as we continue our discussions with them. They go on to say that it's important to stress that our inspectorate work is separate and an ISPCA inspector will still cover the Donegal area. Could we follow up that press release, Donna Marie, and actually find out what they're going to do with the building, the ownership of the building, what their plans are for the building, if you don't mind, please, because that's also a critical point here. But why didn't they get on to the likes of us and other media in Donegal if there was a shortfall there? Give the public an opportunity maybe to say, right, we didn't realise there was an issue here. Maybe this, the association isn't set up in such a way whereby that is possible. But, you know, to sort of do a review and not tell anyone that, you know, they're struggling is a bit problematic. Anyway, if you have any views in relation to that, 08660 25000. I'm joined on the programme now by Councillor Declan Meehan, who's Lasca Hearlock of Donegal County Council's Defective Concrete Block Committee. Declan, thank you so much for joining us.
No bother. Good morning, Greg.
It's hard to progress any work or engagement if the housing agency is absent. What's going on here, do you think?
Yeah, look, it's, Greg, this is something that has come up all too often at the Defective Concrete Blocks Committee. And yesterday, yet again, we had a no-show from the housing agency's representative. And that was the fifth meeting out of nine that we have held in this new term since September last year. So the majority of meetings that we've had on that committee, very important oversight committee for the administration of the scheme and to give voice to the issues that homeowners are faced with under the scheme through access and lack of access to it. And the majority of those meetings, we've had no representation from the housing agency. And the housing agency obviously play a very critical role in the administration of the scheme, along with Donegal County Council, but also on decision making. So to not have them there does not allow elected representatives, representatives of the people trying to get on the scheme, going through the scheme, we're not able to question them and hold them to account.
Yeah, and you know, some might say they're avoiding questions because, I mean, whilst, you know, there are a lot of questions about the Defective Concrete Block Scheme, many of those questions would need to be answered by the housing agency, and there are commitments out there of soon, it's upcoming, we'll have details on that. You know, are they? Is it your view that they're not turning up simply because they don't have answers to the questions, the basic questions you'd be asking? And when I say you, I mean the meeting generally.
Yeah, well, look, I think that that has to be something that you would think about and consider. I think that one of the most important meetings where we didn't have representation from the housing agency was in July, when we had a deputation from Downgraded Homeowners and we had a presentation from Marty McElhenney speaking to the experience of Downgraded Homeowners and those awaiting their appeals. And the housing agency weren't there to hear that. Very powerful, very informative presentation. And that, I think, just is unacceptable. The people who are making these decisions and the representatives of those people need to hear the real-life effects and impacts that the decisions that the housing agency are taking are having on people going through this scheme.
And just to be clear, when you say no-show, they would be scheduled to appear at every meeting, would they, and perhaps send their apologies in the days or weeks in advance of the next scheduled meeting, or simply not turn up?
Yeah, to be fair, they are scheduled to attend every meeting and they send apologies either to the chair or to the director of service who works over the committee. But as I say, you know, we've had a majority of meetings now since last September where those apologies have been received and very important meetings that there's no representation from the housing agency, no ability for us to represent the electorate and holding them to task and posing questions that are of vital importance.
I mean, obviously you can call it out in forums like this, right? But I mean, would the housing minister not need to get involved here and say, look, you know, you need to be attending these meetings. You might not have all the answers, but at least show your face and relate any information that you may have. You know, is it an intervention from him that's required?
Yeah, look, I think that the housing agency need to take responsibility themselves first and foremost, but failing that, and I mean, the committee has written to the housing agency on a number of occasions to outline this issue since September of last year. So absolutely, we've also written to the Minister for Housing on this issue. And just yesterday, the committee agreed, following a proposal from Councillor Joy Beard, to write to the Chair of the Appeals Board in relation to delays there. So correspondence is regular from the committee. all too often, I think it falls on deaf ears, and particularly in relation to this issue of housing agency representation at committee meetings.
So obviously you mentioned there the plight of those people in limbo, the downgraded homeowners. You know, what other key issues would you need to be engaging with the housing agency on at these meetings? I mean, obviously the general working of the scheme, but, you know, what other issues are not being addressed properly or progressed as they should with the absence of the housing agency?
Well, that is the primary issue, is around downgraded homeowners and the various options that are being selected for homeowners by the housing agency. And that is obviously critical. We do receive a report from the housing agency, even if they haven't attended, usually, not always. And that's obviously very welcome to have that information. Other key issues that, you know, relate to the housing agency's presence at the committee would, in my opinion, be hearing from the various community reps and homeowner reps that we have come in, because I think that that's vital, that the people who are working on this scheme in Dublin have an acute understanding of how it affects homeowners here in Dublin.
I mean, it leaves the council out to dry a little bit. I presume the housing agency might have some questions to answer, for example, in terms of delayed payments, frustrations over extra documentation being sought for and it taking weeks to progress it again. And we've spoken to homeowners, and I'm sure you have, that contractors have said to them, sorry, see that start date, I'm not doing it because I've got two other houses and I'm not getting paid and I can't commit to another one because I simply don't have the resources. You know, that kind of stuff would be really important to get regular updates on what they're, you know, what they're doing and how they're doing it and what they hope to change into the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, at even from the Donegal County Council side, and you know, anyone I think who has engaged with the staff in the DCB office will agree that, you know, the staff there are absolutely excellent, and the work that they are doing is to the best of their ability. There have been extra resources put in to that office now because that office is getting busier with, you know, 580 remediations underway in Donegal, still not near enough. We know that only 6.1% of homes have been fully remediated as a proportion of the applications into the scheme.
And we don't know what percentage of those are actually probably outer leaves.
Yes, or what have you, sorry. We have those figures. I don't have them to hand at the minute. But like, I think it's, as you say, the housing agency need to be there to hear about the various kind of difficulties with the administration of the scheme. We have a new update on the report now every month, which talks to and gives us information around the average number of days it takes to process a claim. And that's standing currently, the average is standing at 28 days where there's a further information request required. And it's at 12 days where there's no further information request required. And the aim is to get both of those, one of them already is, below 14 days. But it's important and it's critical that the housing agency are there to hear all of this information that's coming both from the public representatives who sit on the committee, the homeowner representatives that come in, the other industry representatives that come into that committee, but also from the staff of Donegal County Council.
And finally, we hear similar frustrations in relation to trying to secure meetings with, you know, Uisge Éireann representatives. I mean, is there any way to determine if this is uniquely a Donegal problem, or are councillors across the country expressing similar concerns? You know, we have a democratically elected group of individuals that are to bat on our behalf, right? And I recognise the frustration that you're hamstrung in doing so when you can't get a face-to-face with the likes of Uisge Éireann, or, as they are scheduled, a monthly meeting with reps from the housing agency.
Yeah, look, when you talk about Uisge Éireann, Greg, that's a huge issue that councillors the length and breadth of the country are faced with, unfortunately. And I know that, and my colleagues know that from speaking to their colleagues in other counties. We are given one workshop a year at municipal district level with Uisge Éireann. There are many queries that I raised at last year's workshop with Uisge Éireann that I'm still waiting on responses to. So that gives you an indication of, I suppose, the lack of to and fro with utilities like Uisge Éireann in particular. But it is frustrating when you're trying to do your job as a public representative and you can't get that face time with the people who ultimately you need to be talking to sort something out for a community or an individual or a family or whatever that is.
Okie doke. Thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate it. That is Councillor Declan Meaton, who is Lasca Hirlach of the Donegal County Council's Defective Concrete Block Committee. They're frustrated that the housing agency is frequently not turning up for those meetings to try and progress the concerns of people. Various topics we've been talking about. Of course, Fianna Fáil yesterday selected Jim Gavin. A caller says to be the presidential candidate. A caller says, great to see Fianna Fáil deciding to opt to play the GEA card rather than going for a loyal long-term party member as president. They don't like that. We were also talking about the illegal disposal. Throwing away of mattresses, completely unacceptable. But we did then have the conversation about how it's incredibly expensive and there were various suggestions as to what one might do with the old one. But this caller says, I purchased a mattress in Grove Furnishings and they took away my old one for me. So, you know, credit where it's due. Thank you very much for that. In relation to the assassination of Charlie Kirk in the United States, tolerant far left, so-called liberals strike again. Strange how it's mostly them going around shooting people. The left-wing media, CNN and MSNBC, were on a couple of nights ago stirring up hatred against Charlie Kirk, calling him all sorts of things, including a racist, disgraceful and disgusting, they say. But people don't know yet who is responsible for this assassination. And such is the world we live in now that people are actually even suggesting that it could be from the other side as some sort of a distraction. The world's gone, it's gone beyond sort of crazy. Rejoicing all around in the woke pro-abortion, trans-promoting, anti-Christian media today if they can't silence opposing views by news censorship. And, you know, today maybe you can issue that criticism rightfully. It could be in the other direction tomorrow. We need to get past that. We need to find a way of getting past it. Hi, Greg. This policy of changing the population through migration will make the Irish a minority. Do the Irish people have the right to be the majority in their own country? Well, you know, we need to maybe sit down and have a grown-up conversation about this. The truth is we are aging rapidly. We are getting older and older and older. More people are going to be reliant on care than there are working. We are not producing children. So, you know, there comes a point really whereby, you know, Ireland, if it were just Irish, gets to a point whereby, you know, way more people are alive and dying than are being born. I'm not saying migration is the solution to that or immigration is the solution to that, but, you know, it has to be part of a broader, wider conversation. Who's going to look after me in 30 years? Are my boys going to have kids anytime soon? I don't know. Just to let you know that there are two stray ponies that have been found and they are at Carlin's Farm, Milltown Refow. So if you've lost a couple of ponies, they are safe. Get in touch with us and we can pass on some deets for you there. You heard us talking yesterday about a new report which showed that Ireland has the third largest rate of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder in the world. It was a study carried out by the RCSI University of Medicine and Health and revealed that the levels are up to 10 times the global average. So obviously something this significant needs further conversation. Tristan Casson Rennie is CEO of FASD Ireland. He joins me now. Tristan, thank you for your time today. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
So what is fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and how, and I presume it is in many ways, how might it affect people?
Well, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is essentially a neurodevelopmental disorder. It's something that arises from drinking alcohol. And when we say drinking alcohol, we mean any amount. So even one glass, either prior to conception, at conception, or during pregnancy. Now, the important information to remember here is that both parents have a responsibility to lower the risk of FASD. So the recommendation is that a man should abstain from alcohol in the 64 days before conception, at the point of conception. And then the lady should also abstain from alcohol at the point of conception through the entire 9 months of pregnancy.
So do you think there's a bit of mis or disinformation out there that maybe the majority of people would presume that the mum drank while pregnant?
Yes, it's been a long-standing myth that this is a woman problem. Particularly in Ireland, the focus has always been around the woman bearing the responsibility. But science informs us now that this is a shared parental responsibility, and it becomes more of a conception challenge, essentially to lower the risk of or completely avoid the risk of FASD. Pre-planned pregnancy is essential, because, you know, it's a big ask to ask people to start counting on calendars what 64 days looks like.
But I mean, how many, I don't know what the rate of planned or unplanned pregnancy is. I mean, you know, there's different areas of that as well. People sure. might sort of go off contraception and say, if it happens, it happens. And or other people might actually, you know, try and time ovulation. We just simply don't know. Or maybe the contraception has failed. So with all that in mind, does it talk to really the level of drinking in this country as a whole?
It certainly talks to the relationship that Ireland has with alcohol. Just to answer your first question there, the numbers of unplanned pregnancies in Ireland is 2 in 5. So it's fairly high. And of course, if somebody doesn't recognize that they are pregnant, perhaps until week 4, 5 or 6, and alcohol features in their social calendar, even one glass of wine, say on a Friday night after work, then that developing baby has already been exposed perhaps 4, 5 or 6 times until mum finds out that she's pregnant and then says, well, look, I'm going to stop drinking.
How is fetal alcohol spectrum disorder diagnosed?
Well, very sadly, it's not currently diagnosed in Ireland. We are an outlier of most of the world at the moment. We are struggling as a society for the simple reason that government haven't nailed their colours to the mast on this one and come out and said we recognise FASD as a neurodevelopmental disability. So we have no clinical lead for FASD currently at the HSE. We have only one diagnostic clinician in Ireland, which we're very lucky to have, and as an organisation we work with this clinician. But in the main, a lot of people are having to pay privately to go to clinics in the UK, Spain, in Canada, America. So it's very difficult at the moment in Ireland to get a diagnosis. But to answer your question, how do we get a diagnosis? Well, there's a number of trains of thought, but essentially there's a four-pronged approach. And one is to obviously have the evidence of prenatal alcohol exposure. This is where a parent would come forward and say, look, I didn't realise that there was a challenge here if I was drinking alcohol. Secondly, we would be looking for a blood test of the person to rule out any genetic reason why there would be the behaviours or challenges or even some of the body dysmorphia that we might see. And then we would be looking for social, emotional and mental health challenges as well. And there may be also, there's up to 428 recognised comorbid conditions. Some of those are ADHD, autism, dyspraxia, dyscalculia. There's lots. There's 428. We don't have time to list them all.
No,
today.
But so really, whilst they might not be picked up as fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, they may well be picked up as something else.
Yes, correct.
So in other words, people, when we talk about not being diagnosed with FASD, it doesn't mean they do not get a diagnosis and, you know, maybe the school supports and what have you that might be required.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that the majority of people living with FASD in Ireland will be known to state agencies for one reason or another. So, you know, they may have a diagnosis of ADHD, for example. Now, that's good because it's getting them some level of attention and support. However, what we do know is that if the underlying condition is FASD, then how we manage the ADHD, particularly with medication, changes dramatically. It's really important that we get to the bottom of what the primary cause of the symptoms that we are seeing.
But how willing are we as a general population to go down the road of pursuing something that could attribute, you know, guilt, responsibility or blame. I hate to use those words, and I certainly wouldn't attribute them to anyone, right? But why would we go down a route that you know, some of these, it can be difficult enough to process and deal with, but to find out then that maybe even in the absence of knowledge, you are actually responsible. Do we need to have that info?
Yeah, we do. It's really important. I will just say that, you know, no parent sets out to harm their baby.
No, of course, but unfortunately, we can't necessarily convince ourselves of that and still have some of the emotions I talked of.
Sure, but if we don't get to if we don't understand what the primary diagnosis is, then we are faced with many challenges on how we address the treatment or the support of that person.
Yeah.
And so, as I said, if we're treating ADHD with a drug that perhaps would be ideal if that person had ADHD solely as the only condition they're living with, that's okay. But if they're living with FASD, those drugs are actually going to overstimulate the person. They're going to lead to aggressive behaviours. They will lead to lots of different challenges that perhaps aren't needed, side effects that aren't needed. That can really severely impact that person's life. So we do need to get to the bottom of what the primary diagnosis is, because the management of it is different.
Yeah, and I think a piece of information that people are maybe learning for the first time today is prior to conception, the alcohol consumption of the father can also play a role as well. So just to be conscious of that.
And actually it has very much more long-term effects if the father has the impact. What science informs us is when their offspring gets to the age of 40, they will have severe challenges with cardiovascular, with renal, with diabetic and with inflammation. So they will get a significant disease or illness once they reach the age of 40 if there has been paternal exposure to alcohol.
And it has had that, I mean, at the same time too, not every child whose both parents drank right up to the moment of conception will be affected by fetal alcohol spectrum disorder either. It just so happens if that combination of things does have it present.
Yes.
Okay, right. Thank you very much for that. I hope this is not one of those problems either that we don't want to get to the bottom of because we don't want to have to try and find the resources to fix, you know?
Well, it certainly feels like that in the sector at the moment. It's very, very difficult to engage with government. We have very strong support in Senator Anne Rabbitt, who was formerly the Minister for Disability. But in the current government, there's a lot of head turning rather than action, and that's a real shame, given their pledge and their commitment to disability. So we still knock on doors, we still try to engage, but it's a really, well, my hairline is starting to match yours, Greg. So, okay.
But I'd make a choice here. I could grow out a big afro if I wanted to. Not.
Good man.
Hey, come here, finishing on a higher note. Jacob, lovely fella, stayed with us during the summer from Roslyn and Brendan. I presume that's your Jacob?
Yes, that is my Jacob. Wow.
That's the power of local radio, right?
Excellent.
They said he was a lovely young fella. So just leave it on a separate sort of light-hearted human note. It's all human, but you know what I mean. Well, take that with you. Thanks so much, Tristan. I appreciate your time. Look after yourself. That's Tristan Casson-Rennie, CEO of FASD Ireland. Of course, there's no surprise that Ireland is the third highest in the world. The visible signs of drunk driving, street violence and vomit-strewn pavements are all too obvious, but the hidden health problems are not. And I suppose that's right. Why we're having those conversations. But as I said to Tristan, it feels a little bit like something like Lyme disease, for an example, whereby you don't recognise it or you don't get to the bottom of it, because do you really want to sort of have to deal with it and fund it and support people? And I hope fetal alcohol syndrome disorder, spectrum disorder, isn't in that space. If you've any comment in relation to that, please let us know. 086 60 25000. We're going to be speaking actually to a representative of the ISPCA a little later on in the show, which I'm very pleased about, because I just want to get to the bottom of a few things. The answers are their answers. I can't challenge what they believe to be the truth, but I would like to get it all out on the record so we know where we're at going forward. That's coming up and so much more besides on this Thursday's 9 till noon show. I'm going to take a break. We'll be back with the weather shortly. Right. Does anybody anybody know what's going on at Lifford Hospital? There seems to be a lot of activity all of the time. There are workmen day and night. There are lorries and skips there lots of the time. I don't know what's going on there. If anyone has an insight, let us know. It's probably common knowledge in the area. In relation to the defective concrete blocks, I think the government got it all wrong. I think the money should be handed over to the homeowners and they should be allowed to rebuild in whichever way they want. They should be able to downsize. The downsizing suggestion would have been critically. It made it an awful lot more accessible for a lot of people, so they could use the same amount of money to, you know, build a smaller property. Maybe they built a house that was too big and they would welcome a smaller house, easier to heat, etc. Hi, Greg. Using the term plantation is accurate in describing the current mass immigration policy. Facts do not cease to exist because they're ignored, but just using scary words doesn't progress an argument at all. You know, people are prepared. Everyone is prepared to have a conversation about immigration, migration, trying to scare people to progress an agenda. It's simply people are too clever. They're having these conversations themselves, and those words are... they're emotive and what have you, but they don't strengthen anyone's argument, especially when they're so overused. The general population of this country have various views. They know what they think and they know what's going on. Is no one chatting about the national debt? Our budget spending has doubled in the last 5 years. Do people not realise that the government is running our country into the ground and creating huge problems for our country down the road? I think we're writing down our national debt to some extent. It is incredibly high, but do people not worry about it? Not really, I think, because they're not too concerned, because they're probably not the ones that are going to have to pick up the bill that's going to happen down the line. Maybe their grandchildren or something along those lines. Or maybe people are very bothered about it. Good morning, Highland Radio. On the subject of animal welfare, I'm looking after feral cats in a forest 6 miles from where I live. I feed these cats every day and look after their medical needs for the last 15 years, and I'm very happy to do so. I'm a pensioner and sometimes it's hard going, but I still manage to get these animals fed and looked after. Okay, well, there you go. You're doing your bit.